You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I remember walking round the court square sidewalks, looking in the windows for things I couldn't want. There's Johnson's Hardware and Morgan's Jewelry and the old Lee King's Apothecary. They were the little man.
909 here on a Tuesday. Joining me is our Yankee woodcutter himself, Mike Musselman.
Hey, holy crap, man. That's a big project.
Is it? Staining and hanging a door? Come on. What's going on?
I built the door.
No, you didn't. You bought the door.
No, I built it. That's the same comment I got when someone got home last night. She's like, did you buy this? I said, no, I built it. She's like, come on. So then Megan came out to my rescue. She's like, no, I watched him. He bought all the wood, put it together, framed it.
I thought you were last week you were going to buy the door.
No, I couldn't find one I liked, so I built it.
Oh, I missed that part. I remember going out looking for you. You were looking for a door, and then I thought you were staining it. So
no, I built it. Built it from scratch. So my old Craig jig. Craig is my favorite.
So let's talk about it. So
I don't know if you remember my laundry room. It's a big room, two washing machine, dryer, a sink, granite countertop, and then a refrigerator. And then it opens to my master closet on the right. So the door from the mudroom opens up into that, and then there's another door behind that. That when you're unloading dishwasher or you're unloading the washer and dryer, that door leading into the master closet gets in the way because you pick stuff out of the dryer, you hang it up, and you go right into the master closet, hang it up. So that door is kind of cumbersome.
Yeah.
So we wanted to get a sliding door, barn door, just slide it to the side, and then that'll alleviate that problem. So
okay, hold on. So, but it's got it. You're not gonna recess. The door's not gonna slide into the wall. It's gonna slide parallel to the wall.
I'll show you. I'm almost done. I just put the header board up on the wall, and then I got to put the hardware on the door and then hang it and then start doing the final stuff.
All right. So tell us about making the door.
So I just got tongue and groove panels.
Pine panels? Pine door?
That's on the backside. No, it's poplar.
Poplar. All right.
It's a hardwood. And then the front framing that you saw on the front end that has the chevrons.
I'm looking at it. I didn't see any chevrons.
That's cedar.
Which chevrons?
Yeah, there's a like a diagonal piece of the
board. Oh, that.
So I just sent you a picture of it.
When you say chevron, that has a meaning to me, okay?
Yeah. The diagonal board's going across.
Yeah.
So you got the center board that goes across and the two bottom boards.
Got it.
That's all cedar. And then the bottom, the panel board that you see underneath there, that's tug and groove poplar.
I don't think you have your insecticide sprayer stowed properly.
My what?
Insecticide sprayer stowed properly.
That's a fertilizer.
I don't think it's stowed properly. I'm looking at your hazmat.
I do.
I'm looking at your hazmat's a little ragged for your garage. You're a little anal about your garage.
That's where it goes. It's empty, by the way.
You need to tighten your shit up, bro.
I rinsed it.
Look at that, man. It's like, look at this stuff. What is that? That's not like Mike's garage at Pendleton. I walked into it. I was like, whoa, what's going on here, Bronzy? Bronzy takes. He goes, come on, let's go see what the gunner's doing. So we walk down like four houses and Mike's house. We walk in the garage. There's all these little compartmented cabinets and all this other bullshit. I'm like, whoa, this guy's moderately uptight about his garage. What's up with that? This is, you got some work to do, man. You got some work to do. I think you ought to, like, be put on restriction till you get this shit together.
Yeah, I got to clean it.
I know. I've been in that garage, by the way, just for the record. I've been in that garage.
Yeah, what? So Door's almost done. It'll get hung today.
So, obviously stained. Are you staining and then doing lacquer? You're just doing stain?
No, it's Danish oil, so it has its own. It gives its own sheen.
So you put the Danish oil on, and that takes care of the whole thing?
Yeah.
Wow. Do you like working with wood?
I do.
So do I.
I love working with wood, yeah.
And I'll tell you what. And wood is absolutely beautiful. I have a buddy who started doing it in high school, started doing refinishing, and he now owns a business in Sacramento that I don't know, he's been in business for like 30 years. His name is Mark. His business is called Remarkable Marks, and he's been in business for so long. I mean, it doesn't hurt for work, but some of the stuff that he does is absolutely knock your socks off beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know, just the beauty of wood. And so I would go, when my mom lived in Sacramento, I'd go up there, and I took my M1 up there and took it apart, and then he took the wood stock, and he said, okay, here's what I want you to do. We're going to strip everything off it, and then we're not going to do a whole lot to it, but watch how pretty it turns out. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. So
yeah, you can do some great stuff.
Yeah, especially
that's not like wood, yeah.
Yeah, especially like with old M14 stocks. I mean, there's a lot of wood on that, and the M1. They come out and they look beautiful. They look beautiful. So, yeah. What's your favorite thing? This is no small little project.
Especially when you build the door. No, it's not.
Well, just
it's bigger than I thought it was going
to
be.
Well, and just the cuts. The cuts have to be perfect on the chevrons there.
Yeah, I am a big fan of measuring more than once.
Measure twice, cut once.
Yeah, and man, it's been a project, man.
It's been a project. There are some true words. There are some true words. It's been a project. What's the hardest part for you in doing all this?
In doing what?
In doing these projects, what's the most difficult part of it for you?
Putting my design in my head to paper. You know, you always think of it. It's always more grand in your head than when you realize it's like, okay, you're limited to really what the tools and what you can do with the wood.
Well, how are you limited? It looks like you did everything. I mean, what else would you do with that door?
In that case, no. I mean, it turned out better than I expected. It's just sometimes I overreach,
come on.
And I get myself in a position. It's like, oh shit, okay.
Now you got to get yourself out of it. That's always the hard. That's where the improvisation and a lifetime of getting yourself out of trouble really helps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was like General Regner introduced General Osterman the other night. And he said, I looked around for people that had some kind of information about General Osterman, but I couldn't find anybody. And I said, well, first of all, if you talk to people who don't traffic in dirt on people, what do you expect?
Right.
Okay, you got to come to the right people. He said, I didn't think of that, Mac. I said, look, I took over every problem he had at IOC. You want dirt on that guy? I'll give it to you, left and right, man. He's not all that.
Right.
Regner laugh. But you deal with people that don't deal in dirt, and what do you get? Clean.
Clean.
You get clean. So, anyway. What's the weather like today?
It's beautiful out. It's cold. The wind is a little nippy.
Is it?
But it's really, really nice out.
It sucks here, just so you know.
It's beautiful here.
It's raining. Like, what is going on here? Like, what's next? Noah's Ark? Some bullshit like that? So, anyway. I interrupted you. You were going to say something.
Oh, no. I was going to say, man, that pipeline thing or the cable thing got a lot of.
Hold
George
on.
Came back
George, like, though. George got a PhD yesterday in. In underwater cable. Hold on. Now the question was, right? He sent a link about George's buddy Mike's. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's a good guy, and he listens to the program. And so he sends a link about the TAT-1 cable. So we were wrong. Transatlantic telegraph. It's not referred to as TAT-1 from 1866. That's not even a TAT. TAT-1, I think, is as it's referred to, was laid in 1956. I was surprised at at how, when you mentioned the details about how few words could go through in a minute, it's like, why are we even doing this? You know, don't we have carrier pigeons that could fly, you know, to some, like, lighthouse in the middle of the Atlantic, and then we'll turn it around to another one?
Yeah.
But, George, the question that Mike and I were stumbling over was the repeaters, right? For any, and George wrote this, for any amplification or boost, it required AC flow, kind of like a capacitor. It stores electrical energy when electricity flows one way and then discharges that energy when it flows the opposite way. I don't really understand that. This helps boost the electricity and counteracts the effect of inductive loading. The cable itself acts like a load due to its resistive characteristics. I don't do telecommunications, so I am not sure how it works in telephone lines, but it still requires AC power. But, Mike, I thought when we were reading, he says the only available option back then was to crank up the voltage.
Yeah, and that's what they did, and that's what happened. That's why it burnt out so fast.
Right. That compromised the coating. So I don't, but we didn't answer the we didn't answer the question though.
Yeah, how it was done.
How it was amplified or was it amplified?
Yeah, I don't know.
And so that's still the mysterious part of this whole thing is, and George went down that road, but you know, the earlier cables malfunctioned because of the insulation blowing out. And so how did the one in 1866, how is that different? And so that's our conundrum. We don't have that answer yet. But it's fascinating stuff. And all started by us examining history today on this date. We went down a rabbit hole one day, and lo and behold, there you have it.
We got smarter.
Yeah, I mean, and Mike and I both enjoy those kind of, like, technical history. You know, one of the things that I enjoyed, I've talked about infrastructure in a city, and you talk to the city engineers, like in the city of Grand Forks, North Dakota. It was built during the fur trade in that part of the country, so in the mid-1800s. And the Red River of the North flows north. It flows from South Dakota through North Dakota, Minnesota, and then into Lake Winnipeg. And so it became a conduit of merchandise going north to Winnipeg and then throughout Canada. So what was interesting about that is something I forgot while I was saying all this.
There's something interesting in
there. There is something interesting in there. I don't really remember what the hell I was talking about. So so let's change the subject.
Yeah. So what was I going to say? Now you got me, like, confused.
What were we talking about?
I don't remember now.
Why would I bring up North Dakota in the 1850s and the Red River going north?
How it got to be where it's at today?
How what got to be where it's at today?
North Dakota.
I was talking about the fur trade. Oh, no, I was talking about infrastructure. So the city gets laid, you know, the infrastructure gets laid. And the way they did pipes back then were tongue and groove pipes, wooden pipes, with tar around them. And that was the basis. And they said, you know, we dug up the last pieces of that in, like, in the 90s. They were still functional in the city. That's how good that stuff was. That's crazy.
Yeah, that's freaking ridiculous.
but they'll talk about the different infrastructure in different parts of the city and its history and crazy stuff like that. And then I was watching a show that said, I think you and I talked about this, but instead of having to go dig up a city and put in, you know, new concrete pipes and all that entails in terms of blowing up the street and doing it forever all summer long and all that, they just now, they'll take this polyurethane lining and they lower it and they blow it into the pipe with cold air, right? And then they expand it by closing one end of the tunnel, and then they pump a bunch of air and pressurize it, and so they expand it to its sides, and then they change the air from cold air to warm air, and they heat it, and when it heats up, it adheres to the side of the pipe. So without ever digging up the street and all the costs of labor and all that, they put a new pipe inside of an old pipe. No fuss, no muss. And old Mike Musselman doesn't have to get delayed in traffic.
That's pretty cool,
isn't it? Yeah, it's like, and it's cost effective. So you can spend your money on other stuff like repairing bridges and stuff like that.
All of that stuff is fascinating.
I really like it, and that's kind of how we got into the Great Eastern. And the ship itself is fascinating because
that ship at its when it was constructed, it was the largest ship of its kind in the world.
And then they tried to repurpose it and it failed. But and then you see the way they laid the cable in the hull of the ship and how much of it there was and how, you know, it's
well,
so
you know, when
crazy.
You read the very first cable they laid, a ship in an American ship. The Agamemnon, the HMS Agamemnon, and the USS, I forget, it was two navies, the British Navy and the American Navy volunteered, and each one of them met in the Atlantic Ocean. They spliced the cable together and back to back, and then they started from there, the halfway point, and went back to each continent. And then the Great Eastern came out, and then they just put it all on one and went from one side to the other. So the very first one, that's pretty cool that they could meet up in the middle of the ocean and then start their voyage away from each other, separating the cable. And they show like a video. It's probably after the early 1900s, and they show them splicing the cable together and how they actually did it. And
they do?
You know, these electrical engineers putting it together and then putting this wrapping back on and the way they add stuff. And then they put this lead sheet back on. They pour molten lead back on it to cover it. And then they inject nitrogen into it. And they take soap brush to see if there's any leaks on this wrap. I mean, it's just like, oh, my God.
And I'll tell you what the other thing I like is I like how they did, like, technological stuff then. You know, they had different ways of doing stuff, which is really cool.
They used real natural plastic back then from rubber trees in Southeast Asia to coat this thing. And
wait, they got plastic out of a rubber tree? How did that happen?
Yeah, the very first, that's what cost so much. That's why the one guy, the American guy, was a millionaire. And he funded it. Yeah, if you look at George's stuff, if you start researching that stuff, it talks about they use this natural plastic. I forget the name of it, but it was pretty damn cool.
Yeah, and that was advanced science. CV-8. Did you hear Paul Allen's crew found the USS Hornet east of the Solomon Islands? CBS News has a great piece on it. The last thing I saw was that they were closing in on it. They were in the area looking for it. I did not see that they had found it, the Hornet. I wish there was a way that we could, well, I have mixed feelings about it, but part of me wishes that we could bring up those kind of ships and not restore them, but kind of display them, but their gravesites.
Yeah, they're camp.
Yeah, they're gravesite. So, No, Paul Allen, who recently passed away, he's into, I guess, anything. When you have the kind of, when you have Microsoft big money, I guess you would kind of, what are we going to spend money on today? Oh my God, this is wearing me out every day trying to figure out what we're going to spend all this money on. I just start giving. I just
start find a ship.
Yeah, I just start giving it away. Come here, let's go downtown. We're gonna give. How many millions could I give away? How many millions in a billion? There's 100,000 millions in a billion. All right, let's go make
that. You know, that's always been kind of my dream of, you know, I dream about like what would I do if I won a huge amount of money for lottery. One of the things I would do was during holidays and stuff, I'd go out with tons of cash and just hand out cash. Or pay for things and not let people know. Pay off the layaway.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Kid Rock did that, and somebody else did that last Christmas.
So cool.
Yeah, and you saw it's like, what can we do for people that are struggling? Well, they put stuff on layaway and they try to pay for it, and you're like, and Kid Rock went in. I think he wrote a check for $80,000 and paid off everything that was on layaway in some store in Nashville.
Yeah. See, that's cool.
That
would be fun. That's what would make having that money worthwhile.
Yeah, other than that, I mean, we have it all, God Almighty. This is from George, the character known as George Mendoza. The amplification was achieved by increasing the voltage. The message was sent like Morse code, a series of positive and negative signals. Since by the time the signal reached the opposite shore, it was so weak on the receiving end, the galvanometer you talked about yesterday was used to read the signal. So the flow of the electric current is the positive and no flow is the negative. Okay, well, that makes sense to me now. But I thought they had repeaters in there.
Yeah, see, I did too. But in the early ones, they didn't.
In the early ones. But the one in 1866, I thought they did. Yay?
I guess not.
Yeah, well, we have to check. Now we have to do more research. Now we have to do more research because that's what compromised the coding of the cable, which was they had to increase the voltage. See? We're all amateur electricians right now. Electrical engineering, which we don't know shit about, but we're not afraid of it, just so everybody knows. We're not afraid of that.
No, we'll find the answer.
We will, by hook or crook, find the answer to this. They found that the CBS piece had a video of it with a survivor watching it. The submersible found the AF anti-aircraft gun. He had a serious twinkle in his eye. They showed the piece on CBS this morning today. Good stuff. Yeah, it must be crazy for those guys who were on that ship, and then the last time they saw it was when it was sinking to see it again. Wow. Well, I wonder why it's taken so long to find that one. Is it just the ocean so deep there? That's normally the case, the ones they haven't found. Because the Titanic was like, what, 2 miles down or some shit like that?
Yeah, it was pretty fucking far down.
Yeah, the Titanic, that was a ways. Another email question. Funding for the wall. Are you guys going to talk about that? You know, we kind of have not been talking very much about politics. So, $1.5 billion, it's a long way from $5 billion. But I guess we'll declare victory and say, let's do something else. So, I don't know. I don't understand. I don't understand how, you know, we watch this shit on TV. It's not fair to the Mexican people. It's not fair to the American people that live down on that border. And ultimately, you're putting people at their lives at risk because our border sucks. And
right.
I just to not do the right thing for political reasons, it's gross.
Right. It's gross. I mean, because you go back to Clinton years, they were about building a wall, you know, and establishing. I mean, it's just the swing of politics is so disgusting.
Yeah, exactly. Politics.
Yeah, I mean, if the Republicans came out soon about establishing a government-owned Medicare system, then the Democrats would switch to privately funded. I mean, it's just, there's no
there's no common sense being applied. That's why I don't like talking about it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. On this date in 1999, the Senate acquitted President Bill Clinton on two articles of impeachment, falling short of a majority vote on either of the charges against him. Count one, perjury. Count two, obstruction of justice. How he's acquitted on perjury?
I don't get the how is he acquitted on perjury? Bold faced lie. Yeah.
That is the infamous. That would depend on your definition of the word is. If is forever and cannot be, then that would be one definition. Like, are you kidding me? Are you gonna actually go there?
You're gonna insult me by playing this game.
And his answer would be like, what? What game? Yeah, that game. All right? That game. But he did it. You know, and again, I always laugh, like Clinton with his buddies. Man, they got pissed at Monica Lewinsky. Could you imagine if they found out about XYZ? Like, oh, they'd lose their minds if they knew about that one. Holy shit.
If there was her, then you know there's at least a half a dozen more.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's like John F. Kennedy stuff. Like, they went crazy over Marilyn Monroe. Could you imagine if they found out about whoever?
So. Yep. No, that's why I don't like politics.
Bill Clinton, though, it is, it's honestly, it is classic stuff. When he talks about that stuff, and he, hold on, here's 60 seconds of it, all right? This is him.
Whether or not Mr. Bennett knew your relationship.
Okay, this is the question from the deposing attorney. Bennett is Clinton's attorney.
With Ms. Lewinsky, the statement that there is no sex of any kind, in any manner, shape, or form with President Clinton was an utterly false statement.
No sex of any kind with President Clinton was an utterly false statement. That's the question.
Is that correct?
Yeah. It depends upon what the meaning of the word is. If is means is and never has been, that is not a, that's one thing. If it means,
he almost said that's not a true statement, but he stopped himself.
There is none. That was a completely true statement. But as I have testified, I'd like to testify again. It is somewhat unusual for a client to be asked about his lawyer's statements instead of the other way around. I was not paying a great deal of attention to this exchange. I was focusing on my own testimony.
Yeah, that's what he was doing. That's what he, and then that led to this one that I love. This is one of my favorites.
But I want to say one thing to the American people. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Ms. Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people.
Crazy shit.
He was found innocent of perjury. The President of the United States, God, because it's classic honesty. It makes me laugh every time I something the podium. Oh, my God. El Capo found guilty. Going to go to jail for life for purchasing Mexico. You're not allowed to buy a country there, El Capo. Sorry about that, bro. And all the other bad things he did. Unbelievable.
Crazy shit, man.
Exactly. The women of Utah Territory gained the right to vote in 1870. That was crazy. In 1870, on this date in 1915, the cornerstone of the Lincoln Memorial was laid in Washington, D.C., right? The cornerstone. That was laid.
Right.
Right. On this date in 2000, Charles Schulz, the creator of Peanuts, died at the age of 77, and that's it. Charles Darwin was born on this date. Are you a big physics guy? You like science more than me.
Yeah. Yes, I'm. Science has always been a part of my life. I love that stuff.
I don't. I'm not a big science guy. You know what I don't like? I don't like memorizing stupid rules. I think I got turned off to science when they used to make you memorize, like, name the seven classes of the duck-billed platypus genus pool. Like, no. I don't like that. And that's why I hated geometry. Geometry is like, memorize these rules and apply them to these angles. Like, why do I have to do that? I don't want to do that. So I didn't. I suck at geometry. I sucked at geometry at the time. So that's why I think I don't like
it. That's okay, though. I mean, it's not everybody.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love, I don't know why.
What's your favorite part of science?
Like, I don't know. I like it all. I mean, I remember, like, I still all know the three laws of motion, Newton's laws.
What are they?
And the first rule, it's the object will remain at rest in a uniform state and motionless unless the state is changed by external force.
Ooh.
Second one, force is equal to the change in momentum. That's mass times velocity.
Right.
'Cause that helps me understand, you know, so I understood this stuff, ballistics and stuff. And then the third rule, for every action in nature is an equal and opposite reaction, right?
Right.
And then those are the laws of motion. Then you have Albert Einstein's principle of relativity and the constant speed of light. That stuff really kind of, when you start talking about mass and energy, you know, Einstein's theories, those are the ones that tough, like, get your head around.
That he thought, and then he thought it up.
Yeah, you just come up through that. It's like, what? You know, and so, you know, you talk about the speed of light in a vacuum is constant. You know, so space is a vacuum. And, you know, trying to understand what the speed of light is and how that's relative to, you know, one, travel. So you start thinking about, like, you know, how things work. That stuff to me is like, whoa, crazy stuff.
Now you're like becoming a brainiac. You're leaving the galaxy there, Captain Kirk. This is about Bill Clinton. He was accused of forcible rape on national TV, Juanita Broderick, and the rest of the media yawned. He was accused by Kathleen Wiley of groping her in the Oval Office the day after her husband committed suicide, again on national TV. And again, the media looked the other way. Where's Alex Hollings? He's in Georgia, trying to help his mom find a house. That's where Alex is. Yeah, I mean, look, it's all depends on if you are sympathetic. It doesn't. The truth doesn't matter. Come on. How many times do you have to say that? Till you get it through your thick heads. The truth doesn't matter. It only matters. Like, look at this stuff in Virginia. They're Democrats. If they were Republicans, do you think they'd still be in office right now? No, Richmond would be burning right now if they were Republicans. That's the truth. So, why do we expect anything different? We expect nobility out of fools? I think not, my friends. I think not. I invite you to come to reality where the rest of us are living these days. Boom. Take that.
Yeah.
do you two, either one of you two, know anything about the security arrangements for that jury? I don't know that I would really care to be a part of that group that sentences that guy. You know they're going to come looking for you. They'll throw big money to find who is on that jury. I would imagine that would be that their identities would be pretty tightly held.
Was it a grand jury?
No, it's a jury, his trial. But how would you even impanel that jury knowing the violent nature and amount of money they had?
Yeah,
I would not want to be. In fact, hold on, let me look at security precautions for capo jury. Unprecedented security protecting jurors. Here you go. As the much anticipated trial of Joaquin Guzman got underway in New York this week, unprecedented security measures were in place to safeguard the jurors and others involved in the case of the man accused of running the most infamous...
Trial is underway, but opening statements have...
Shut it. Each juror has two guards, and the security is getting tighter, a federal law enforcement official connected to the case told Fox News. And for the judge and the prosecution, too, another unheard-of twist. Before the trial, the 61-year-old Guzman was made to promise he would not order the killing of any jurors, all of whom will remain anonymous. But that's a pledge that should hardly be trusted. Like, really? Like, okay, you have to promise you're not going to kill them all. No problem. I won't kill anybody. Come on. I'm innocent anyway. Like, who do you think I am? Like, why would you think I would do such a thing? Yeah, then he gives the, like, slit-their-throat signal to one of his boys in the room.
Well, the people coming in probably had, you know, it was on a public. You just couldn't get in there.
No, they don't allow sketch artists, but I'm surprised that why would they have them in the room? Why would
I thought they did have sketch artists. They couldn't do anything with the jurors.
Oh.
Yeah.
But why would they have the jury in the room?
I don't know. Maybe there's like a something in front of the juror panel so you can't see them from the gallery.
These people think nothing of killing anyone. Killing anyone they don't like, man or woman. They'll decapitate, cut off limbs, shoot, drown, cut you up. It's no big deal. Yeah, I'm surprised that the jury wouldn't be in a different building, watching it on videotape, so that it could.
They could be.
Well, it doesn't sound like it though. It sounds like what you said is true, that the jurors are protected, and that the sketch artists cannot draw them, but they're plainly visible in the courtroom, which means that they can be identified.
But I mean, like, there could be a panel up in front blocking, like, just a partition.
This kills me. He was made to promise that he wouldn't kill the jury. Given those security concerns, selecting a 12-person jury was, not surprisingly, no easy affair. On Tuesday, two jurors asked to be replaced. Should say, ahead of opening statements. One juror who was kept despite bursting into tears last week presented a medical note for dismissal. Another expressed financial hardship.
Huh.
One during the jury selection, one member of the pool was rushed to the hospital after suffering a panic attack. Several potential jurors expressed extreme anxiety, and another said she was nervous and feared for her family because they lived close to the courthouse. Some admitted to have.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be in that jury.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would want to be there, but I mean, like, you put your entire family at risk. Yeah, one of your kids winds up dead because you were on that jury. That's why I don't understand why the jury has to be in the room with guys like that. I think there should be, for unusual circumstances, there should be unusual remedies, and that would be the prosecutors don't have any choice. They have to be in there. The judge has to be in there. But the jury, right. To me, you have to protect them. So, I don't
know. That's what I think. There had to have been a partition or something.
You think so?
Yeah, to block them out from the gallery, not from the judge or the bailiff or probably the attorneys. Because that partition, depending on how the jury is seated.
So
I don't know.
Now we're talking about the setup of the courtroom. He was found guilty on all 10 counts, by the way. Courtroom sketch artist at the trial of no longer alleged, convicted drug kingpin Joaquin Guzman was barred from. You know what? They shouldn't call him El Capo. Right? They should, we should call him like Fat Boy now. Right? We should call him Idiot. Cause that's how
Prisoner 695, yeah. November 6th.
Exactly. You, who do you refer to that? Why am I recalling you referring to somebody as a, by a number? Because you take their power away. When you call him El Chapo,
that's yeah, his, you're empowering them.
Yeah, that's his drug, that's his big time drug guy name. He's not that guy anymore. No, let's see.
Scared little rabbit now.
Scared sketch artists at the trial were barred from drawing the facial features of or distinguishing hairstyles of any key witnesses on Monday. In addition, the artists were required to show the sketches to government prosecutors for approval before they could be distributed, the judge at the federal trial said. In a related move, prosecutors asked the judge to impose sanctions on defense counsel because Guzman's wife used a cell phone in the courthouse, according to a court filing. The incident showed the intense security measures at play in the case and provided a glimpse into the lengths to which the government is going to provide security for witnesses. I want to see about the so they have witnesses on the stand, but you can't draw their face or their hair.
Yeah, but they let El Chapo's wife in there with a cell phone.
Some idiot.
Yeah, what the fuck?
All of a sudden, she busts out her cell phone. Courthouse security staff observed her use of a cell phone inside the courthouse on November 20th. The prosecutor's letter states U.S. Marshals Service security personnel reviewed surveillance footage, images, and confirmed Espero possessed a cell phone on November 19th.
Shit.
Non-attorney visitors to the courtroom are not allowed to have cell phones according to the court rules. Blah, 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 blah. I want to know, I'm curious, what is the setup of the for the jury? Wanted, New York Times wanted 12 people willing to serve as jurors.
You know, some people look at that as a book deal.
Yeah, let me tell you, that'd be an expensive book, man. That'd be an expensive book. I know. I don't.
That's not worth it. That 12 minutes of fame. No, not worth it.
Yeah, then you write a book. Then you would have been going on TV and talk shit about it. Yeah, enjoy your money because you know you're not gonna open the door to your car, right? You're not going to do anything for the rest of your life without wondering is it going to explode. If you agree to that. That's why, to me, again, now I'm really curious about this. Is the jury in the courtroom? I guess.
Yeah, there's got to be. And they should release that.
I would be curious to know, to see, there's not even sketch drawings of the,
no,
of anything but the prosecutors. Well, here's News Info InquiringNet. There's an image. And it shows the jury box, and it shows jurors looking at monitors, but there's no, it kind of shows different colors.
Sleepy juror called out for snoozing during El Chapo.
You think? I can't sleep at night, okay? I can't sleep at night. So, yeah, I don't know that. I mean, I'm all for life, liberty, and justice and all that kind of crap, but let me tell you, that's a little much, man. You want me to risk my life to hear this? Like, have you ever served on a jury? Have you ever been called to jury duty?
Two.
Did you serve on the juries or get dismissed?
Yeah. No, I tried to get dismissed.
But
that was the one. I think I told you there. I was at Charlie's. I was a gunny first OAR, and I got called to the jury room. And then as they're doing the, you know, juror number 27, so I ask you questions, and then they both ask questions, and then the judge says, "Is there any reason why none of you can serve?" And so I raised my hand, and he's like, "Come approach the bench," and I did. And I said, "Yes, sir." Before I could speak, he goes, I see you're active duty Marine Corps." I said, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "Thank you for your service." I said, "Thank you." And he goes, "What, are you deploying soon?" I said, "No, sir. I'm just, you know, I'm a company gunny and really can't miss the time away." And he said, "Well, let me explain something to you." Ooh. And he goes, "First of all, I got my start in law as a Marine Corps JAG officer." Yeah, and I was like, and he goes, "If everybody's here that needs to be or should be here, it's you that provides us the opportunity to, you know, to do this, conduct this. I think it'd be wise, you know, da 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 da." And he's like, "It's up to you at this point," after he laid his big guilt trip on me of, you know, "I provide the very freedoms for them to operate this." And I was like, "No, I can stay." He's like, "Good choice."
Right. And then, look, I didn't fall off the truck this morning. Right. So yeah. When you start going down that road, like, what's next? You're going to start auditing my taxes, pulling out my,
right. And then we met and we listened to the, you know, the whole stuff, and then they dismiss us to pick a foreman. Mm-hmm. We go back in the room and I'm real quiet, and they say, "All right." So, and then this guy stands up and he goes, "I'll be the foreman. I'm a legal aide or a legal person for some law firm and blah, 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 blah. And I've done this before." And, you know, he's doing his little speech, and I'm just sitting there listening to him, and I'm ready to vote for him. And the lady next to me goes, "What about this guy?" And I was like,
"Who?
Nah." And I was like, "You don't want me, guys. I don't play that game. I have deadlines. I'm a Marine. I'm pretty strict. You know, da da da." And I give my, like, why I shouldn't be doing it. And the lady goes, "But my father was a Marine, and Ooh. I'm a good person because of me, and that's what I want. I want a Marine in charge." And then before I know it, everybody's like, "All in favor of the Marine?" And it's like 9 of the people in there, not even myself or the guy that, and, you know, vote for me, just about everybody except for the guy that wanted it and me. And it's like, "Who's not in favor?" And I raise my hand, and the guy, and I'm like, "Oh, the ayes have it. You're our foreman." I'm like, "Oh, fuck."
But that's all right. If you're going to be there, you might as well be in charge of it, right?
Yeah. So we walk back out, and they, you know, "Have you selected a foreman? We have, Your Honor." And he's like, "I see it's you." And I said, "Yes, sir." And he goes, "You know, good choice." You know, he's like,
he's having a great time. Yeah. Like, thanks, yeah. Gunny. No problem.
I mean, so it lasted like a week, I think, 5 days.
Yeah.
It was a really interesting case. I really was interested in it because it was science.
Oh, you know, it was so, science?
Yeah, and really what it came down to was this guy was suing the city in Newport Beach. He lived on Balboa Island.
Right.
You know, so he had a property. He had a rental property above a business that he owned. And when they were fixing some part of this bridge, they were doing this hydraulic hammering of these pylons to shore up the bridge. You know, so they hammer these pylons down into the ground
right.
with this machine. Bam, 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 bam.
Right, right.
They were doing this. Well, his claim was, because of the hammering, the liquefaction that took place of the soil composition underneath his place caused his establishment to sink and cause all this damage. And he was suing the city for, you know, millions of dollars to basically shore up his property.
Whoa.
And so he portrayed himself first as like this is his only rental property. You know, it's like a rental property, and this is my business is how I stay alive, and now I can't even do that. And you're like, oh, you're feeling sorry for this guy. He wasn't dressed very well, you know. You're like, and he had 3 attorneys, and so you're not putting it all together. And then the defense comes out and goes, "Let me portray this gentleman to you guys. This is one of
multiple businesses he owns across the world. And it's only one of hundreds of homes that he owns and he rents out across the world. Mr. Largent, you know, flew here from New York on his private plane, his private jet, you know, on all this other stuff. So don't, this is nothing, you know. And I think he was asking for like, you know, $250,000 or something like that from the city. And he's like portraying this guy, they're portraying this guy as like, you know, almost out on the street homeless because of what the city did to him. And you're like, oh. And then you start realizing he's just a spinster. And so, and then his lawyers were pricks.
That never works.
Ever. So, you know, when they're talking down to you as a juror, yeah, like, come on, guys. Basic, I'm not a lawyer, but basic 101 is don't treat me like a piece of shit. All right? The defense guy for the city was, like, totally cool. He explained everything. He was, like, putting it in layman's terms and, you know, asking. I mean, it's just working with us.
Breaking it down Barney style for
everyone. Yeah, where his three high-priced, you know, $1,000 a minute lawyers were being just total asses, condescending, never looking at us, you know, thumbing up their nose at us. It was like, whatever. So, I mean, just for that, we were like, screw this guy. He ain't getting shit.
So did you let everybody vote for the verdict, or did you just tell them what the verdict was?
Well, we went in there, and because there was like three counts. And then so if we found them, we found the first count plausible, then we could look at the other two. But if we said no to the first, then the other two were no's as well. So we talked about the first one. We're like, do we think the damage caused the building? You know, could be, yes. You know, there's experts in there talking about, yeah. But, you know, was it the city's responsibility? No. You know, the city had a bigger picture. If they hadn't done this, then all of this would have came about over time anyway, right?
So what was the city had limited liability?
Limited liability. This didn't fall in that clause. And so we found the no. We went out there, read our verdict, and they were obviously not happy. And so the judge was pretty cool. He's like, this is the time where, as a young lawyer myself, I would talk to the jurors after the court and to understand how they came about with their decision. So it made me a better lawyer. Right? So the defense guy, he's talking to us. He's afterwards. He's like, you know, the guy for the city, he's talking to us, asking us questions, you know, so he's writing stuff down. He's super, cause he's a nice guy. He's smart, but he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. And so, you know, we give him the wire brushing, said, you know, this and that and this. And the other three lawyers, for the guy, because the guy wasn't there, the plaintiff wasn't there the day of the verdict. It was like, you know, he was too busy somewhere else.
So you didn't have you didn't get a chance to, like, sneer at him? Like, take that asshole?
No. So none of the other attorneys came to us and asked us questions.
They were
just packing their shit up. So I was like, okay. So I walked over there and introduced myself.
Hey, boys.
And yeah, he's like, hey, guys. And so at the table, and they stopped, and they're like, what do you mean? I said, hey, just to give you a heads up, well, first of all, we didn't like you guys. There was not a juror here that was sympathetic towards your client in any way whatsoever. I'd say, you know, again, I'd work with that, take it for what it's worth, but we didn't like you. You're a snob. You treat us poorly. You know, and they didn't say anything. They just listened to me, and then I got done talking. And they just went back to doing their shit. And I was like, all right, whatever.
Oh, really?
Good luck, boys.
That's how much we value what you had to say.
Yeah. I'm the guy that gets, you know, that's the beauty of our court, is it's peer-to-peer. You know, you're not any better. And if you don't take the lessons learned, then you're going to repeat the same mistakes. But, yeah, the judge was, he was really cool. And then the second one only lasted a day. I tried to get out of two, and they did the same thing. They were like, rah, rah, rah. And then I got called here, and then I wanted to be on the juror, and when they brought me up for questioning and they would ask me questions, they didn't want a hard, I mean, it's like, okay, this hard, everybody's here is a hardline conservative, but I guess when you're a little bit, when you make Attila the Hun look like a liberal, then I guess they don't want you on there.
You don't make Attila the Hun look like a liberal, though. You're reasonable.
I am. I'm the guy you want on the jury. I'm a reasonable guy.
I don't disagree with that. I think even, because I think, and I think this is the beauty of our friends, but, I mean, at the end of the day, they're honest people. And even if they didn't politically agree with you, they'll do the right thing. And they'll lean on others to do the right thing. Hey, you just don't like him or her because of the kind of hair they're wearing or whatever. Bottom line is, I would.
I'm the guy you want on your jury. Believe me.
Yeah. At the end of the day, you want honest people that aren't afraid to stand up for what they believe.
Right. I'm going to be as fair can be, and give you the even, you know, give you the shape, give you the even look. So, yeah. And they said no thanks to this one. And I was like, I'd like to get on a jury. I like juries.
Yeah. I've never been. I've been summoned. It's entertaining.
Yeah. But I've never actually served. See how it really works? It's pretty cool.
All right, one more email and I'll let you go. WJC, which is William Jefferson Clinton. As much of a scumbag as he was on the hashtag MeToo subject, his most heinous crime was his enabling China to advance her multi-stage missile technology. China was having issues with their multi-stage rockets, having suffered multiple failures launching satellites. This is when Clinton took the technology transfer approval away from the DOD, and the State Department gave it to the Department of Commerce. In swoops Huge and L'Oreal, big Clinton donors, and they fixed the missile issue, advancing China's technology by a generation. The Senate held hearings on this, chaired by Fred Thompson. I will never forget watching John Glenn run interference for Clinton in those hearings. I was very disappointed. How many sailors, Marines, or even citizens might die in the future due to this? Don't forget the discovery of the Chinese money flowing to the Bill Clinton campaign via Charlie Tree and John Huang. Nobody ever talks about this shit, and it's so fucking heinous.
Yeah.
The Clintons are heinous. Honestly, Trump's heinous. I just like him, though. Let me rephrase that. I'm sympathetic to his policies, but he's as heinous as
his personality just sucks.
It's the same disgusting ball of American politics that we now get. And you know what's interesting is I'm really curious. Do the Democrats actually believe that they are going to win with candidates? You had Amy Klobuchar, who's a pretty moderate from the state of Minnesota, and she scoffs at people that label her moderate. The people that elect the president are not going to elect, you know, a way left leaning person. I just don't believe they'll do it. If that's how people run, they're going to elect Donald Trump for a second term.
Well, they've been putting a lot of attention in Debato.
Yeah, but if he doesn't run as a moderate, right? If he tries to run as a better version of Bernie Sanders, they're not going to win over the people that elect the president. And those people are fairly moderate. They elected what? Clinton. They elected Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Obama. It's that swing voter. Are they going to go that far to the left? I just don't think you're going to get enough of them to go that far left.
No, you're right. It's going to be a very interesting political
setup.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
So if that's what the bet is the bet that, you know, Bernie Sanders would have been the strongest candidate, therefore he would have been, you know, we should have elected him, and he would have beat, people would have got behind him. I don't know. That's the test of the moderate. And Hillary Clinton ran as a moderate, and she ran neck and neck with Donald Trump. So when you go further to the left, I don't know that you win that there. So it's kind of interesting watching all of it.
Yeah.
All right, what else you got? You going to finish the door today? What else you got going?
Just the door right now.
That's it?
Yeah, I got a Randy sent me the DTS travel info. I got to sign that and send it back to him today.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I got mine. I said, I don't have anything for you. He said, okay, just sign this, send it back.
So, yeah.
All right, man. Have a great day. I'll talk to you on Thursday.
I'll send you a picture when it's done.
Oh, can't wait.
All right, talk to you.
There you have it. Whoa, where did that come from? If you're just tuning in, don't touch the dial, because let me tell you what you're going to hear. Yeah, I'll tell you. You can hear a discussion about if the stuff that is coming out of the study in Texas is true, and the implications of it are the people that go see therapists, most of them don't need to go. A small fraction of those that go actually need to go. So if you don't need to go, what do you need? Think about that. You might need to talk somebody that you're to somebody that you're close to about your shit. Whoa, what? Yeah, how about that for a breakthrough? You got to talk about it. So I'll leave you with that as we head out the door today. So you'll hear a discussion about that. You'll hear about a 2-minute audio clip about that, which is the intellectual basis for some of the discussion we have. You will also hear retired Marine Corps Sergeant Major Joe Huell. He is he's on the board of the Carolina Museum of the Marine. He's also a Purple Heart times 3 guy from Vietnam and a whole bunch of other stuff. So I met him last week at the Marine West Expo. So you're going to hear from him on his career and the museum. So, don't touch that dial. On a Tuesday, All Marine Radio, over and out.